Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Progress is being made with batteries, but there are obstacles ahead. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn. Today is December 27th, 2013. Thanks for joining us today. We are on day two of our energy article, Battle of the Batteries. You can find it on pages 38, 39, and 40 in your Advanced magazine. And it's an interesting article that talks about advances in batteries that are actually helping renewable energy sources become actually more viable, and mainly solar and wind power. As far as there's one thing to generate the electricity from these sources, it's another thing, once we have it, what do we do with it? Well, we're going to have to store it in batteries. The problem is finding the best battery to store all of this energy. And we're talking about not just a little battery that might light a flashlight, but we're talking about lighting cities. And so this is a big, big project, big issue, and it's the future of energy, and we're kind of sorting it out right now. Josh Mooney and Rebecca Krusneski are back in the studio with me today. Hello, panelists.
Hello, Bill.
Great to have you here today. Before we move on into today, give me something from yesterday.
Well, something we skipped over, but it's a phrase I've used quite often in Asia, and some of my friends have looked at me and said, what are you talking about? The phrase 24/7. Mm. When you do something that's running all the time, we can say, oh, they're open 24/7, or it's something I do 24/7. And it means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Great term to use, and also no. So if somebody says 24/7, it's all the time. Okay. All right. I think your boys keep you busy 24/7.
They sure do. They have constant energy 24/7.
Children keep you busy 24/7. I know Rebecca works 24/7, it seems like. Right, Rebecca?
Well, not quite. But no. What was actually very interesting for me from yesterday's article was how huge this market is. Yesterday, we gave a figure at the very end saying that the market for storing solar energy is estimated at $19 billion. This is, of course, U.S. dollars, but in the next 5 years. So that is a huge, huge number, a huge, huge market.
Yeah, it's going to grow. And like Josh was saying, everything we do now uses a battery. Everything has got batteries in it. Think everybody is walking around with not one, but a couple of gadgets. It might be a smartphone. It might be a tablet, a laptop. That's just in the data processing and information stuff. There's also all sorts of other battery-driven devices.
Oh, sure. Think about hospitals and businesses and governments. They are just constantly adding battery-powered technology. We used a phrase yesterday, too, the dawn of the energy storage age. Mm-hmm. And we've lived through some ages, right? Do you remember the dawn of the internet age when we first all got online for the first time?
First three email accounts.
Yeah, the dawn of that age.
And the dawn of the smartphone age. That's certainly come on us pretty quickly.
Yeah, so things will continue to change. And there's also, just like this silicon chip and also processors, you know, companies are looking for new processors, getting smaller, getting faster. There's greater demands on the circuitry and chips inside of gadgets to get smaller and more powerful. Likewise, batteries. I've read several articles just about Apple and the iPhone and the struggles they had making the device work and trying to get this battery. The battery was so important in the design.
Sure.
It's because they had to deal with something that was big enough to power it but was not too big. So batteries are key to almost all of these devices that we are using now. So, All right, let's get into our reading today. We will split it up into two sections. So our first reading there on page 39 will be that left column.
Obstacles ahead. Still, batteries face obstacles, including cost and safety. Lithium-ion batteries aboard two Boeing 787 jets failed in January, causing a fire on one and smoke on the other. Batteries from the same manufacturer caused problems in two Mitsubishi vehicles. A hybrid Outlander car overheated, and an all-electric iMEV caught fire during testing at an assembly plant. While the electronic vehicle industry says these incidents are the exception rather than the rule, money has also been a problem. Toyota's J.C. Chitwood said lithium-ion batteries are just too expensive to make electric cars cost-competitive without subsidies. Speaking at the Advanced Energy 2013 conference, she said Toyota is expanding its line of electric vehicles to meet the U.S. government's fuel efficiency targets, not because they're profitable. Chitwood said a major battery advance is needed. Toyota is working on several alternatives, including cheaper, longer-range batteries that use magnesium instead of lithium. Commercialization, though, is years away.
Obstacles ahead. So yesterday we introduced the idea of this new element, vanadium, being used to power batteries. In the past, lithium ion, at least in the past several years, lithium ion has been the major source of battery power, powering all sorts of different things, including cars. That is the main battery source for cars. And lithium ion does come from Bolivia. That is the main source of lithium ion. So it's amazing. They've got this desert that is just stock full of lithium ion. So
it's actually really amazing, because when you think about Bolivia, you think about one of the poorest countries in South America. But suddenly now, since everyone needs lithium, I mean, this country is set to make tons of money.
For centuries, for
millennia.
They're
able to sell with lithium.
Bolivia was poor,
yeah.
Has been poor. And then it's funny how things turn in the world, that all of a sudden they have what the world needs.
Exactly.
And they know it. So, and that's good for them. For other countries, and like the United States, in addition to trying to become energy dependent and getting away from oil, likewise, the United States is looking for ways, well, how do we find a battery source instead of switching our dependence from the Middle East to Bolivia? We actually need to work on creating our own battery source. So, obstacles ahead. How do we start, Josh?
Well, there's two of them that are facing, that batteries are facing: cost and safety. And we talk about safety first. A lithium-ion battery explosion or fire that was caused in Boeing's 787 jets, which are their brand new jets just out on the tarmacs this year, and two of them were recalled, and then all 787 production was shut down because they didn't know why these batteries were catching fire.
I remember reading about this earlier in the year, and it's really quite a problem. They've actually been replacing a lot of their electronic sources, electrical sources in the jets, with these lithium-ion batteries. They also want to use this to replace the hydraulics. And the hydraulics actually control the flaps and the other things that control how the plane flies. Because there are problems with hydraulics and the liquids and things. If you got a problem with hydraulics, it's bad news for a plane. So they replace them with these lithium-ion batteries. Well, they had some batteries like catching fire and melting.
That's actually really scary.
It's really
scary. If you're on a plane, because that almost guarantees some kind of crash.
A couple of the planes were up in the air when they realized they had indicators indicating that there was smoke in the room. And fortunately, they were close to airports and these planes did land. But I saw pictures of these batteries. These things were melted.
Yes.
Right.
It was bad.
No, the FAA stepped right in. And I mean, these are planes that were going to revolutionize air travel. It was all going to go this way. So looking at it very, very closely.
All right. So we talk about that, and they are working on that and fixing that and correcting those problems. And then also we see the batteries from the same manufacturer.
Yeah, we were talking about electric cars, about how electric cars like those made by Tesla are gaining in popularity. But a problem is the lithium-ion batteries in the cars. And here we saw Mitsubishi, two of their cars, electric cars, they had problems with the lithium-ion batteries. And it's pretty scary, too. Like, the batteries caught on fire.
Mm-hmm. We see.
Yes.
One of their cars.
And there was a vehicle that's not mentioned in here, the Fisker, F-I-S-K-E-R, which was the first all-electric vehicle to be produced, mass-produced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an American company. Mm-hmm. And they had a couple of their vehicles explode because the ion batteries had so many issues. One just blew up in a guy's driveway.
Oh, my.
And another one conked out while Consumer Reports was test driving the vehicle.
Well, that is bad. Because Consumer Reports, that's for our listeners who might not have used Consumer Reports, basically they are a magazine that
yes.
basically rates all sorts of products. And usually in North America, that is probably the first place you go before you buy a laptop or you buy a new car. You go look at the Consumer Report rating on that car or on that computer before you go and buy it. So
yeah.
if Consumer Report is driving your car and it catches on fire, that is a very, very bad sign.
Yeah. So some of these vehicles are catching on fire. As I was reading this, I was reminded about – I don't know if this ever happened with you guys, but I have used, for instance, my iPhone to make calls on Skype. And then I will be holding the phone. And if I'm on Skype using my iPhone for 20 or 30 minutes, I don't know if you notice it, it gets really – It gets hot.
Yes.
My
phone's
hot.
The battery heats up.
It does.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, listeners, you might notice that too with your phones too. And actually then, not only is it a problem, I don't know if your phone's going to catch on fire, but I was thinking this is going to also cause problems with the electronics inside that phone. So later, if I'm wondering, well, why aren't my apps working or why is my keyboard malfunctioning, it might be a problem because, well, this thing got hot and affected some of the other circuitry was inside this phone. So batteries can have a problem with overheating. Computers have caught fire.
Oh, yes. Sony BIOS.
Yeah, yes. Laptops.
They were burning up libraries in America.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, what does the electronic industry say?
Well, the electronic industry, of course, is what they would say. They say these incidents are the exception, which means that these are not normal. Maybe it just happens one or two times out of 100. So they're the exception rather than the rule. And that's a very useful saying we use a lot. It's the exception rather than the rule. So it means most of the time it doesn't happen. So this is what the electronic industry is saying. But for the consumer, of course, we are looking very closely into safety issues before we would dare buy a car with yeah. electric battery.
Well, I mean, that is true. They are the exception, not the rule. However, if you're the guy that had your Fisker car blow up in your driveway – that's no comfort to you.
No.
Right?
I want there to be no exceptions.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You want a purely safe vehicle
mm-hmm.
that, you know, certainly has its challenges from a charging standpoint, but you hope it's not going to blow up.
Even if it only happens one time in 1,000, one time in 10,000, that is still not satisfactory.
No.
Not good enough. All right. Next paragraph, we hear from a spokeswoman at Toyota, J.C. Chitwood.
Right. Well, now we're going to discuss the second obstacle. The first mm-hmm. one was safety. Now, cost. And she says that the lithium-ion batteries are just too expensive to make electric cars cost competitive.
Mm.
So a vehicle, I know the Toyota Prius is in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, which is pretty expensive for a U.S. brand new car.
Yeah, and it is, and especially she's saying here without subsidies. So in the past, some governments have said, yeah, we're going to give you money, like we learned yesterday, the German government mm-hmm. giving subsidies for some purchases. And what JC is saying, well, without the government providing some incentive for consumers, the pricing on these cars is not going to be competitive. And a lot of other companies, it's controversial because some companies would say, hey, why government are you sponsoring this car when we're doing our best to make these other types of cars?
Right.
And it's almost can be construed as unfair for a government to give subsidies for some things.
And what they also promote, certainly they say we're the green solution, that you're thinking about the environment. But they also say that you're going to save money in buying less gas. And it is true, but I even went on the Tesla website recently just to see, and they have a calculation where they can tell you how much money you're going to save.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for me, with how much I drive and the cost of gas in America, it was maybe $2,000 a year I was going to save to buy a $56,000 car.
Exactly.
That was
going
to take a long time for it to, quote, pay itself off.
Yes.
Yeah, your break-even point.
That's true.
Then it becomes a real debate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So until these cars can be cost competitive, we won't have a big section of the population buying it.
No.
So it would just be a niche car. It'd just be for people who have the money and are more green.
Right.
So in order for the government to make this really popular in the country, we have to make sure that the cost of the cars go down.
Right now, the market has primarily been upper middle class, university educated people buying these cars. And that's okay. However, if you really want to impact the environment, you're going to
need the masses.
Yeah, you're going to have to appeal to a large
group of people.
You
definitely need the masses.
Well, Toyota is trying to do that. And J.C. Chitwood was speaking at a conference, and she said Toyota is trying, and they are expanding their line of electric vehicles, right?
Yeah, but what's really interesting here is Toyota is saying that these cars are actually not profitable for them. So basically, they're making these cars in the hopes that their research and development can continue to make progress, so in the future, they can make a lot of money from this type of car. Mm. But right now, they're actually not making money.
Yeah. A lot of times they make these cars, companies make certain cars to meet government fuel efficiency targets. And in fact, the U.S. government will come out and they will say to a manufacturer, all of your models, when you average them all out, you've got to be at 21 miles per gallon. Or then the next year they'll say 22 miles per gallon. So Ford and General Motors and everything, they got to tweak their cars to hit those goals, right?
That's right. Fuel efficiency standards are all the rage in the United States as the government continues. I think it's actually called CAFE. It's an acronym talking about the movement up of fuel efficiency.
And it's all moving up. They're not moving it down. They're not lowering the bar on this. So J.C. Chitwood then goes on to say a major battery advance is needed. Well, what's Toyota doing?
Well, they're working on several alternatives. They're not waiting for the battery industry and scientists to come up with something. They're looking at cheaper, longer-range batteries that move away from lithium toward magnesium.
Okay. All right. So they're trying different materials. We've already learned about vanadium being used. Now we see magnesium. So they are trying. However,
commercialization, which is basically making money out of something. If you make something to commercialize something, you make this technology marketable, you bring it to market. Bringing it to market is still years away. Just over what we just talked about for the last couple of minutes, the two factors, cost and safety.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they find that magnesium can make good batteries, it still might take maybe 5 or 10 years before it goes to market.
Okay, let's have our second reading for today.
Looking for alternatives. Batteries continue to be a challenge, especially those for electric vehicles. Esther Takeuchi, chemistry professor at SUNY Stony Brook, said at the same conference. Her university and others, some with federal funding, are looking not only at new chemical mixes, but also at nanosizing the chemical elements, or making them microscopically small, to make them more efficient. Batteries are just one of many ways to store grid-scale energy. The most common is pumped hydroelectric, in which water is sent to a reservoir and released later to run generators. Storage is the glue that can hold the grid together, said Matthew Maroon of GE Energy. GE which opened a $100 million factory in New York to build a sodium nickel chloride battery, announced that Invenergy will install its brilliant wind turbine with Durathon batteries at a Texas wind farm.
We start the article by talking about alternatives. And here we have a professor, Esther Takuchi, saying batteries continue to be a challenge. So batteries are what's preventing major advances in clean energy. And here we see that Esther Takuchi's university, they're researching new ways to make batteries. And these might include new chemical elements, like we talked about magnesium earlier, as well as nanosizing the chemical elements. What is nanosizing, Bill?
Well, nanosizing would be reducing the size of the, I believe it would be the cells or the molecular makeup of the elements. So they're going to try and reduce the size of the molecules that do make up these elements. And it's just like anything else, trying to make things smaller and more efficient, pack more punch, whether it's vanadium or magnesium or whatever, to make them more efficient. I do want to mention just the one thing about her university, SUNY. That's S-U-N-Y, stands for State University of New York up top. So that's where Esther Takuchi is working as a chemistry professor. So while she's working on this, nanosizing the chemical elements, or doing what?
Or making them microscopically small. And that's this whole industry of nanotechnology where we are just shrinking things down so small. This is what's driving, chips, where mm-hmm. we can put microchips in our clothing and conduct electricity all day long, and we can do all sorts of things. When something is microscopically small, you see the word microscope in the word, and it just means it's so small, you need a microscope to see it.
Yeah, and so this is what they're working on to try and make the batteries more efficient. And we see here in the next paragraph, batteries are just one of many ways to store grid-scale energy. We talked a little bit about that yesterday as far as this word grid, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. The idea of storing energy and supplying it across a large swath of land to many homes and businesses, you need a system to do that efficiently. And the system that has been developed in America is really old and outdated, and it's called the grid. Mm-hmm. And we're waiting for it to break down, but we don't really have an alternative to the grid currently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's certainly had issues, right? And there's electrical companies in each region that own and operate their portion of the grid. But you've had, of course, companies like Enron that were tweaking the grid and making prices artificially high. It's been a trouble and an issue and a problem for Americans for a long, long time.
Yeah, the grid is referred to as far as the power system and the way it is structured in the United States. And it worked really well 50 or 60 years ago, but it's become outdated and it's not efficient. And the problem with the electrical grid in the United States is a lot of the equipment is really old, and there's a fear that it's going to break down.
It does quite often. In California, when a lot of us are running our air conditioning on hot days, we'll have blackouts.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be 2 or 3 days a month where we will just have blackouts, perhaps 8-10 hour stretches at a time. Mm. And you think, this is crazy. I'm in a first world country paying tons of money for my electricity, and now I have to go a whole night without, anything working?
Yeah.
But it happens quite often.
Does that happen in Canada?
Well, actually, in Canada, I didn't experience too much of this. But when I once lived in Shanghai, it can be taxing in the summer.
Yeah.
Because a lot of factories are using a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Well, so there are, like Josh said, blackouts, or basically lack of electricity, is actually not a uniquely American problem. It's actually global. It could be anywhere.
You just wouldn't expect it to happen.
Yeah, you just don't expect it to happen in
the tony parts of Southern California.
Yeah.
Well, when I was in Delhi, in India, it was happening. The power outages were happening every half an hour.
Oh,
it
my.
It seemed like it was insane how yeah. often. And it would go off for 5 or 10 minutes and come back on. And it just was this constant on and off thing. Now, we're talking about batteries here, as far as batteries, one of the many ways to store grid-scale energy. Now, in the past, the most common way of storing this grid-scale energy was to it's to pump water, hydroelectric water, which is using like dams and things to, mm-hmm. to pump water, then which is then saved in a reservoir and released later to run generators. It's just the water running downhill and turning turbines
yes.
that actually generate power. Now, we hear from Matthew Maroon in this next paragraph.
Yeah, and Matthew Maroon, he's from GE, General Electric Energy. And the key here, he says, is storage is the glue that holds the grid together. So basically, we see again how important storing whatever energy form we get, we need to store it. And what the, GE has just opened up a big factory in New York, and it's kind of complicated. It's a sodium nickel chloride battery factory that it's building.
Yeah,
so basically, it's a battery. It's a battery that's a mix of elements. The elements here are sodium, nickel, and chloride.
So there we go. There's a different material used for this battery. There's, as we can see, there's a variety of materials. Now they're going to take this battery, and then what did GE announce about this battery?
Well, that Invenergy, another company, will install its brilliant wind turbine with Durathon batteries at a Texas wind farm.
Okay. Invenergy is they're actually a wind farm company. And their business is owning wind farms and generating power. They're headquartered in Chicago. But they've got these wind farms, windmill farms, all over the place. And they've got one in that they call Brilliant. That's the name of their wind farm down there in Texas. And they're going to be using – so they generate the power with the windmills, and then they're going to store them in these Durathon batteries.
Mm.
Durathon being essentially a brand name that GE has called their batteries, right? Okay, so that might help our listeners understand what that sentence and what that paragraph is all about. It's very difficult, confusing, but GE is making the batteries for this wind farm company then to store the power, and it's going to be more efficient than the batteries they've used before. Listeners, thanks for being here for this challenging energy article. Come on back for day 3. We'll see you then. Till then, this is Bill.
This is Rebecca.
And Josh.
Saying goodbye.